Hello and welcome to another episode of the MLS Podcast. My name is Saxon Baird and I'm here with Matt Fink.
Hello.
Hi.
Hey.
A lot of soccer this weekend.
There was a lot.
Particularly in one day.
Yeah, like got off the couch after I think it was like game three and there was just like a divot left. And my dog, who's not very big, just kind of like fell into the divot. Sitting next to me. That's too much soccer.
I mean, I'm curious, like, how do you feel about the massive Sunday four games? I mean, I know it seems like all the announcers, particularly in the Seattle game, which was the last game, he was making jokes. He said something like, I hope you're like well hydrated and have eaten enough food today at the start of the game. I mean, I don't know, how do you feel like the marathon Sundays?
I mean, I like it, to be honest. You know, I didn't watch them all initially. Luckily, MLS Live has this cool thing where they're doing where, you know, in the past, MLS Live, if a game is broadcast on ESPN or like FS1, it takes like 48 hours before you can watch it again.
Right.
But MLS Live is letting you watch do the full replay in less than 48 hours, which is nice because, you know, I didn't have time to watch, I think it was Toronto and NYCFC when it happened, and I caught it like later the next, like, next morning.
You needed to like eat or something?
I need to eat, I need to walk my dogs, I needed to like do things, and you know, that's important.
I mean, my
no, it was Seattle and Dallas I didn't watch when it happened. I watched that one later.
You watched it later, yeah. My concern is that it happens on Sunday, and like on Sunday there was like a World Series game and there was also like NFL, and I don't know, for a sport that's like growing and like wants to get exposure, I kind of worry that it's being, particularly broadcasting, like kind of just being pushed to the side, especially when you have all these other sports going on and major events. I mean, I'm just here complaining. I don't really know what goes on behind the scene when it comes to making deals with TV and scheduling and everything like that, but it is sort of just my concern that maybe Saturday would be a better day so it doesn't conflict with the NFL, because, you know, the NFL in this country like rules all. But maybe it doesn't matter. Maybe I'm being silly and thinking that NFL fans would actually watch soccer. I don't.
I'm sure there's...
I don't watch NFL.
I'm sure there's some overlap. I mean, I think we lucked out this year probably because the teams that are in the playoffs are Chicago and Cleveland. Our teams that are not in markets that are going to be
with baseball
this year. Like last year, for example, the Blue Jays, I think, were in the playoffs at the same time.
Yeah, that's right.
Toronto FC was making their first playoff run, unfortunately ended early. But that would have been difficult if you're a Toronto FC and a Blue Jays fan.
Yeah, so. Yeah, definitely. I agree. I don't really know if there's any overlap. But I was just thinking about it on the way over here and thought I'd mention it. And actually this weekend there will be another massive Sunday, so make sure you make a lot of food beforehand or order like five pizzas.
What would be better? They should just take a break, like an intermission. at least
a 6-hour movie
between games. Right.
And then like watching Lawrence of Arabia.
You can get some food, you can do what you need to do.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, because it is like very back to back. Like there's like literally like 15 minutes or maybe even less between games. Yeah, I do agree with that. But before we go into those games, we'll do a little like housekeeping. Matt, do you have some news for us?
Yeah, another retirement to announce. Connor Casey, 10-year MLS veteran, formerly of the Bundesliga, U.S. men's national team. I think it had like almost 20 caps. Retiring. Previously played with Philadelphia Union, Toronto FC, Columbus Crew, and of course Colorado Rapids, where he won MLS Cup in 2010. So we wish Connor Casey all the best.
Yeah, great career. And you were also mentioning that some sort of non-soccer news.
We weren't the only ones apparently glued to the TV watching all the soccer. Leslie Jones, Saturday Night Live star and Ghostbusters star, also apparently live tweeted like all the playoff games apparently this weekend. I saw some of the tweets. They're pretty funny.
Nice.
They're pretty interesting. She was definitely getting into it, and also into some of the players, particularly Tim Howard, it seemed like. She also managed to catch an NASL game. I think it was like Minnesota United, soon to be MLS, and New York Cosmos, which that's what I was saying. You watch more soccer than I did.
Yeah, that's impressive. And actually, that's actually a good matchup, I feel like. If you're going to watch an NASL game, that's probably the two teams to watch. So, well, Leslie Jones, if you ever want to come on the show and talk to us about soccer, we live in New York, and I assume you do too. Moving on to the games, if there's no more news. Let's start with the knockout round, and let's start with Montreal defeating DC United on the road, 4-2. Mateo Mancosu with a brace. Surprise! Montreal does just fine on the road without Didier Drogba. I feel like the DC United defense was really kind of a letdown here after a kind of a great final third of the season. But maybe we shouldn't be so surprised at this result. I know there was like a lot of talk leading into the playoffs, particularly like Taylor Twellman and a lot of other commentators, including ourselves, about watch out for DC United, watch out for DC United. You know, they're on fire. But yeah, I don't know. Montreal's still a really, really good team and kind of proving it in this game.
Well, finally, the Montreal's back line, you know, showing what they did last year.
Right.
And Laurent Simon standing firm against, you know, these DC attacks. He had a monster game. Evan Bush had a monster game. This game easily could have been 4-0. If DC hadn't scored those last two goals when Montreal was bunkering like in the last like 10, 15 minutes.
Yeah, I agree. I think definitely like the credit needs to go to Montreal's defense. Yeah, despite those two late goals, they really kept Patrick Mullins particularly in check, who didn't have a shot on goal. It's not what you want from a striker in a playoff game in a knockout round. And also Costa and Lloyd Sam, who I, along with Mullins, I guess had a combined, I was reading, have had 34 goals combined in the 14 previous matches, for the most part, pretty much shut out for most of this game. You know, you were kind of mentioning before this game that you thought that actually DC United's solid midfield might be troublesome for Montreal. What went wrong, do you think, for DC here?
I mean, especially, they've got a strong midfield, and I think it would be hard for Montreal to play through the middle. That's usually not going to be a problem when Montreal is trying to play out on the wings through Piatti and Oduro. But with Patrick Nayarko, you know, on the wing there, DC's pretty strong actually in those areas. Taylor Kemp also very strong and left back on the wing back. You would think that it would be tough for Montreal to spring their counters, and instead it was kind of the opposite. Every time Piatti and Oduro got the ball, they were incredibly dangerous, and Mancosu just times his runs perfectly.
Yeah.
In transition, Mancosu and Piatti are so dangerous.
Yes.
That I'm wondering what kind of back line is going to be able to stop them.
I agree, and I think that we saw that in the next game. But before we talk about the Montreal Red Bulls game, you know, maybe let's just like quick comments on like DC United. I think they could walk away. Personally, I feel like they could walk away from the season happy for the most part. I mean, they made a lot of moves during the season, and it actually worked out well, got them to the playoffs. Obviously not the result they want, but I think there's a lot of exciting players on this team, and I think that that going into next season, there could be a lot of promise for this DC United team. Particularly, I'm going to be particularly interested to see what this team does in the offseason.
Yeah, I think if Ben Olsen can keep this core together, I think that they're building a really strong squad. You can see that. It's a disappointing exit,
definitely.
All the momentum they had built.
Right.
But, you know, kudos to Montreal for doing what they've done well all season.
Yeah, DC, yeah, I agree. And
can I add one thing about this game that I saw? So apparently DC, prior to this game, has a new, like, mascot that they're kind of rushing around, which, okay. You know, RFK famous for its age.
Right, okay.
And for its odor in the stands that shake. But it is also famous for being home to several raccoon colonies.
Oh, wow.
So apparently the raccoon is now the new mascot that they're kind
of
like.
Oh, my God.
Not like a full mascot, like dressed up like we are the raccoons, but like little raccoons wearing DC United shirts and stuff like that. I think that's great.
Oh, that's great. That's great. You know, I always find it also interesting that the U.S. men's national team still plays RFK like pretty regularly. I've never been, but I hear a lot of bad things about it.
They're going to miss the mustiness when they leave.
Indeed. Yeah, yeah. quite possibly not. but moving on to the next game that Montreal played, they went back home to Stade Saputo and defeated the New York Red Bulls 1-0. In the 60th, the 0-0 tie was broke by a great volley pass about 30 yards by Marco Donadel to Matteo Mancosu, who was like perfectly timing his run. As you mentioned, he is wont to do. Ball bounced in front of him, and then just like a one-time bullet in the back of the net. Absolutely stellar goal, perfect finish, really, really impressive.
Yeah, I mean, again, this is just how do you defend against players like Piatti and Mancosu, who in transition can turn, make a run so quick, and then these shots. Piatti can do the same thing from outside the box.
Yeah, definitely.
They're just so hard to defend. For the most part, Piatti was shut down until this point because he was being man-marked by Dax McCarty.
Right.
But if you're being marked by a player like Dax McCarty in your New York Red Bulls, that means you lose Dax McCarty. You know, in their ability on the field.
And I think we saw that, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, Mancosu has really slotted into this team really well, and I think we were kind of scratching our heads, like, why, when they signed him, not necessarily we thought it was a bad move, but just sort of like, what does this mean? And one of the things we were thinking, maybe they're trying to prepare for the future without Drogba, and if that is the case, the future looks bright. Mancosu definitely making Drogba dare I say, something of an accessory. Drogba was once again not on the bench or in the starting lineup for this game. He did make an appearance in the final 10 minutes in the stands, sort of like waving to fans and everything.
And speaking of accessory, with an amazing scarf on.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, well, like, excellent. Yeah, I was very impressed with his scarf. I mean, of course, it's Drogba. But yeah, it's also just turning out to be a great story. I actually didn't know this, but Matteo Mancosu, who is now 31, didn't make his debut in Serie A in Italy until the age of 30 in 2015. Wow. Yeah, and he actually spent most of his season, most of his career in the lower divisions in Italy. Wow. Yeah, he made 26 appearances for Bologna in Serie A, only scored one goal. Obviously, a different story now in the MLS. He has three goals now in just two playoff games. But I also kind of want to, speaking of Italians, like, you know, the Italians that are sort of taking over a Montreal impact.
The Italian connection.
It is a connection, as we saw. And I kind of want to talk Marco Donadel, the 33-year-old Italian, has sort of really added some solidity to the center of that midfield for the impact and kind of helped, like, set up the attack for players like Piatti and Mancosu and even, like, Drogba. Obviously, in soccer, stats don't always tell much of a story, but I did find it interesting that in 20 matches, Donadel registered 4 assists this season, and in the playoffs, he already has 2. So, all of a sudden, the impacts were kind of maybe stumbling towards the playoffs, looking unbeatable at this point.
Maybe it has something to do with the way these veterans respond to the playoffs as well. You know, Donadel has been someone who, with his time in Montreal, has kind of frustrated me a little bit, because in some games he's amazing and really shows that pedigree that he has. And then in some games he kind of disappears, or actually can be kind of error prone, especially rash challenges. I'm thinking, if I'm remembering some examples here. I think when the playoffs come, veteran midfielders like Marco Donadel, like Patrice Bernier, especially in this game, who's 38 years old, and like the legs on him.
Yeah, very, so I know, I agree.
And veterans like that are going to carry you through the playoffs, because when the game is on the line, they know that they want the ball and they know that they want to do well. They have the ability to...
Yeah, they really shine when the stakes are on the line.
Absolutely.
Like,
and I think that they can handle the pressure and they know how to deliver. And for a team like Montreal, who is actually a fairly old team, you know, that they're fielding. I mean, thinking Simon, Donadel, Bernier, Drogba.
I mean, even Mancosu,
even
Piatti.
Yeah, you know, they're older players. Even Odoro,
right?
I think
right.
Is on the older side. Yeah. I mean, these players know how to respond to the pressure.
Yeah,
and I think that's really important.
Well, you know, speaking of veterans, maybe one we should mention is actually Evan Bush, sort of maybe an unsung hero who actually had another great game. There was a controversial non-call in the box. It kind of looked like Bush took out Bradley Wright Phillips in the first half. I kind of think it was a foul, but the ref seemed to be kind of tentative to make calls all this game. Probably should have been a PK, but you know, I think overall, Evan Bush, once again, putting in another great performance, as he's been doing in the final third of the season and in the playoffs. And I think the Red Bulls could have done a lot better. I think we actually identified last week how Ambrose Oyongo has really kind of struggled defensively, and I don't really think the Red Bulls really tried to challenge him at all in this game, and I think that was kind of a mistake. I think they really, you know, maybe they might want to correct that in the second leg.
No, Alex Mühl kept coming inside. He kept coming off the wing and coming inside every time he'd get the ball, which, you know, if you're congesting the midfield when you have Cabrera and Simon and Bush, you know, they're waiting for you, it's going to be harder to get through. It would have been better to pressure Oyongo, I think, and deliver crosses into the box and see, you know, what Bradley Wright Phillips can do with them. Any second ball that bounces through, you've got Mike Grella, you've got Sasha Kljestan prowling around. I think that might have been a better option to pressure Oyongo in that way. Although Alex Mühl has shown his ability to go for goal as well, so who knows?
Yeah. I mean, it'll be interesting to see how Jesse Marsh's like team responds. And I mean, it should also be mentioned that Red Bulls did have their opportunities, particularly in the dying minutes. Golden Boot winner Bradley Wright Phillips found himself alone inside the 6-yard box and completely scuffed it. I mean, really, no excuse. Even the announcers were scolding him. I mean, he basically just needed to tap it in. I don't know how he missed that.
Yeah, it's not. It can't be excused from the Golden Boot winner. I mean, you have to. The playoffs are on the line. You have to put that in the back of the net. Yeah. That away goal would be huge for Red Bulls, and they better hope they don't regret it.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, Red Bulls, you know, might be ruining that opportunity. I mean, obviously, just, you know, the Red Bulls have been kind of rolling on all cylinders, and, you know, just tough game for them. You know, it didn't happen. But I will say that going into the second leg in New York, I think the Red Bulls need to be worried about their penchant for conceding late goals, because I have a complete belief that they can score goals at home. I think, you know, I actually expect it. I expect them to go back to Red Bulls Arena, and I expect them to score goals.
Absolutely.
But can they prevent Montreal from scoring that away goal and really, you know, possibly ending the Red Bull season? And they have not necessarily proven the ability to do that. They've held on to games, but they've held on to games conceding goals. And in the playoffs, that obviously means something different.
Yeah, and I think that I love moments when these narratives kind of come to a climax like this. This may be the moment when all their time and energy spent towards learning how to shut games down really comes good.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Well, I'll have to see. I'm really excited for that game to see if the Red Bulls can come back from the 1-0 on aggregate. Moving on, going back to Canada, Toronto defeating Philadelphia Union 3-1. No real surprise here. Philly struggled with starters with nagging injuries. Yeah, Philly really struggling at the end of the season, sort of sneaking into the playoffs into that sixth spot. You know, I think the question on a lot of people's minds is whether this Philly season is a disappointment, sort of with the way that they fizzled at the end. I don't think so, just because no one picked the Union to make the playoffs and to do well. I also think, you know, they actually made some really exciting moves by bringing in Bedoya. You know, but I do think it's important for the Union to build from this season. I think there's a lot of question marks going into next season, you know, as to whether this was like a fluke or whether this is something they can really build on. I mean, they have a lot of, you know, like, can they replace Giancarlo Barnetta? Is CJ Sapong the forward of the future, who, as I mentioned in the last pod, only 7 goals this season, start off hot and then completely disappeared? You know, I don't know, how do you, if you're a Philadelphia Union fan, how do you think that you should take, you know, what's the takeaway from the 2016 season here?
I mean, I'd be disappointed you didn't do better towards the end of the season, but I think the takeaway is that, you know, you've built a good foundation and that the relationship between Ernie Stewart, sporting director, and Jim Curtin, is strong, that the players seem to enjoy playing for this organization, and that the bringing in Bedoya is a good example of the increased reach and power to bring in these players that Ernie Stewart has. This is the one team in the offseason that I would be really looking for transfers in terms of playmakers. Who are they going to bring in to replace Barnetta is going to define the identity of this team.
And, you know, and also, as I mentioned, like, maybe bring in some competition for CJ Sapong, you know, and see if you can put the pressure on him to sort of keep the quality that he had early in the season for the entirety of the season. Yeah, I think also has to be mentioned is Jim Curtin, the manager for this team. You know, he obviously did something with this team and they were performing really well, but they seem to not be able to figure it out in that last final third of the season, you know, so.
I say you give Jim Curtin at least one more.
Oh, sure. And in MLS, it seems like front offices are not as willing to push the big red button and fire managers. So I think he'll be there next year, but, you know, I think there's going to be definitely a lot more pressure on him. That's for sure. And as for Toronto's performance, kind of what we come to expect from them. Like, any comments about their game against Philly, their dominant performance?
It's exactly what we've come to expect. When everything's working well for Toronto, the goals come. You know, they've got this ability to be so dynamic in the attack, but just to put the pressure on so close to goal that eventually Jozy Altidore or Javinko, somebody's going to score.
Which is what we kind of saw in the leg one of the quarterfinals, where they defeated NYCFC 2-0. NYCFC going back to the back three, which we kind of saw the last game of the season. Also, some interesting replacements on the starting lineup by Patrick Vieira and his starting 11. Like, what was he doing here? What's going on? Tell us about the changes at NYFC.
You know, I think you were right last week. That seems to be the consensus, that Johansson was better than Josh Saunders with his feet.
Yeah, and I think if you're going to go to the back three, you need a goalkeeper who is good with his feet.
Absolutely, and. That was one major change.
Yeah.
The idea, I think, is that they played a bit more defensively than they have. You know, this is a team that all season long has made it their mission to just outscore goals. I think they have the most goals scored, actually, out of any team in MLS during the regular season. But, you know, they just had to make sure that they were knowing they were going to ship goals. They just had to make sure they scored more. That's obviously not going to work in a two-leg playoff competition where away goals matter. You need to be able to shut games down. You also need to be able to post shutouts. And I think Patrick Vieira was trying for this approach, but all that really wound up happening was they were just getting swamped by Toronto FC. I mean, if you give Toronto the ball, they're going to take advantage of it, and they're just going to pressure you so high. I mean, Michael Bradley was so high up.
Yeah, yeah. And actually, even Johannesson, the NYCFC goalkeeper, you saw during the game, like, waving his hands and stuff to tell his defenders, like, get out of the box. Like, get out of here. Move up. No, I think that's a really interesting point for this squad that scored 62 goals in the regular season. As you mentioned, the team that did score the most goals in MLS, they looked like a team that was completely outclassed here. And I actually find it amazing that Toronto was only able to score in the 86. I feel like NYCFC was making like really rash fouls. There wasn't that many opportunities. David Villa only had like 30 touches, which I read somewhere on Twitter. Sorry, I don't know who I read it from. I know I should quote my sources, but I think that's only happened like 6 times before this where he's had that few of touches. They just seemed a team that could not handle Toronto. And I'm actually surprised it took so long for Toronto to get on the scoreboard.
There was a brief moment I thought where NYCFC looked really good. And that was when Mikey Lopez came off and Frank Lampard came in.
Right.
And
who immediately got a yellow though.
Right. Well, and Vieira, who made I think a tough decision and pulled David Villa and brought in Kyrie Shelton.
Right.
For a good 10 minutes, NYCFC looked really dangerous. I mean, the fresh legs really helped. We saw this in their last game of the season, too, when Frank Lampard came in for Pirlo, who was out with this game with a calf strain. Looked right. Incredibly dangerous.
Yep.
They just pushed so much more aggressively on the ball. I actually expected them to come into this game doing exactly that, having Frank Lampard in place of Pirlo, and who's still injured with his calf strain, and just pushing really high up to go for the goals. I mean, that's what you're good at. That's what you should do.
Right, exactly.
When David Villa is having an off day, which I think he was.
Yeah, definitely.
And I think, and when you decide to put in Mikey Lopez instead of say, Frank Lampard, you're just not going to get that.
Going back home, I don't think that this matchup is in the bag for Toronto FC, though. I do, you know, we have seen NYCFC score a lot of goals. They concede a lot of goals, but I think they could score a lot of goals as well. And we could be in for possibly a really exciting, open, fast game, especially on that small pitch at Yankee Stadium. I don't know. I would probably put my money, if I had to, on Toronto FC, but I think that we could see a surprise performance here from NYCFC going back home.
Especially since now they're in a situation where they have to score goals,
yeah,
which is what they're good at.
And kind of the most exciting NYCFC to watch.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it should be interesting.
This is the argument towards, and this is a slight sidebar here. All 4 games that were played, the lower seed teams who get the home game in the first leg, all of them won, and no away goals were scored.
Yeah, yeah, that's weird.
And so there's this argument that's developing a little bit in the the MLS post game sort of debate between Andrew Wiebe and Kai Kamara, actually, both agreeing on this, that it doesn't matter because the setup is so good, because if you're the higher seeded team, you still want the home game on your second leg.
Right, right.
And I think this is exactly why, because if you're Patrick Vieira, and if you're David Villa and you're NYCFC, you want to be home in Yankee Stadium with the chips down, because you want to be able to throw everything forward. Now you don't have to worry about holding back.
Yeah.
You just have to go for the goals, and you just have to outscore Toronto.
Yeah, definitely that late goal conceded, scored by Toussaint Ricketts, makes it difficult. But I would say maybe, looking at other teams in the playoffs, I'd say that, you know, the Red Bulls only conceded 1 goal, kind of same situation, you can apply everything you just said to them, and maybe more of a chance for them. I will also suggest that if NYCFC wants to advance to the next round, that they should change their jerseys.
I cannot stand those away jerseys.
Yeah, I'm just gonna take a minute to complain.
They're the worst.
What? It looks like something out of like a 1990s rave culture.
Yeah, I don't like it.
It's like neon orange and spiraling circles around NYCFC's badge. Who said this was okay? Like, yeah. This is New York City, the center of the fashion world, at least here in the United States. And not to mention, you know, you have like, you play in Yankee Stadium, where you have that sort of a classic like Yankees baseball uniform, and you have this like, who wants to walk around town wearing something?
You're
like
right, though. Go for white with pinstripes.
That'd
why
be cool.
Not?
Yeah,
that
why
would
not?
Be really cool.
Yeah, that'd be interesting.
So apparently, according to Michael Lewis from Big Apple Soccer,
wait, is this about the jerseys?
No,
just kidding.
No, it's not about the jerseys. Apparently, you know, there's some discontent in NYC.
Oh yeah, you mentioned this. Yeah,
I'm not sure. You know, this seems to, you know, be coming through the rumor mill, but it's from BigAppleSoccer.com, Michael Lewis, that apparently NYCFC players, unnamed, were meeting offsite to discuss trying to pressure Patrick Vieira to change tactics in the playoffs. Not quite sure in what direction, not quite sure how.
But not quite sure what players.
Yeah, but the discontent with Patrick Vieira is disconcerting.
And curious, especially in light of how they parted ways with their previous manager. in the season before this.
And just the success that they've had this season. Yeah. I mean, it just seems unlikely that, not unlikely, it just seems unwise to be doing this. You know, I'm never a fan of mutiny. I don't think it's ever good. I never think it brings a team together. And this, I think, only adds maybe to NYCFC fan anxieties.
Yeah, yeah, that is troublesome going into that second leg against Toronto FC. We're going to go ahead and call that a first half. And in the second half, we're going to head west. We head west, but before we dive into playoff games, we have another news item that we want to discuss, and that is Houston Dynamo interim head coach Wade Barrett not getting the head coaching job.
No, it went to Wilmer Cabrera, hired by Houston Dynamo.
Former Chivas USA manager.
Yep, in their last season.
Yeah, I liked what Wade Barrett did. I think that Houston Dynamo really struggled defensively in the first third of their season, and he definitely solidified that going in, but maybe not really finding that consistency, particularly when scoring goals. I think he probably did enough to earn it, but I can also see why they decided to go in another direction.
Yeah, I mean, you want to make a long-term investment.
Right, yeah.
I think for all our talk about, you know, which manager is going to get the axe, which one isn't, you know, a lot of MLS clubs in the past year or two especially have shown that there's a major benefit to maintaining the same coach even after you have a losing season. Obviously, the huge example here is Pablo Mascherini,
right,
who, after two losing seasons at Colorado, has come good with almost the same players, you know, showing that, you know, what you can do once you have time to improve and put your system in place. Another good example is Toronto FC, which has had a revolving door of managers never making the playoffs. You stick with Greg Vanney, his system comes in place, and they're turning into a powerhouse.
Yep.
That's good for the club, because you look at BMO Field this weekend, how many fans were there. It felt like you were at Providence Park.
Yeah, it was great.
Which is only good for the league, only good for the club. And I think that if you're Houston Dynamo, you look at what clubs have done by having consistent managers in place, and you say, do we want to have Wade Barrett for 4 years?
You know, yeah, and I think that's the question that is a good question. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, and the answer was no, they don't. However, I do think that Wade Barrett definitely showed some managerial chops, and maybe there is a job for him in the future elsewhere. Let's move on, though, into the playoff games, because that's what everybody is watching now, the teams that are still alive. And let's start with LA Galaxy putting on a clinic against Real Salt Lake, scoring 3 goals. Emmanuel Boateng, who we have noted in the past as having a lot of potential, obviously, blazing speed or pace, as they often say in this sport, kind of having a breakout game with a brace against Real Salt Lake. Also some interesting lineup decisions from Bruce Arena, putting Sebastian Legette in the midfield, Emmanuel Boateng, as I mentioned. He gave the Galaxy a 2-1 lead in 26 after weaving through 3 defenders and putting a shot from outside of his foot past Nick Raimondo. And then less than 10 minutes later, Boateng scored his second goal. And it would be enough. All 4 of Emmanuel Boateng's goals have come against Real Salt Lake, and proving a nightmare once again for RSL.
He's got their number for sure.
Yeah, definitely. Also, Alan Gordon having a monster game with 2 assists and a goal, leaking up really well with Boateng. Doing what he does, good positioning,
but also,
making smart runs.
Yeah, and Donovan and Dos Santos connecting really well on the assists.
Definitely.
And I think that's really important for LA Galaxy.
Yeah, for sure.
The chemistry there on that side of the field is going to be critical.
I agree. I will just say, we've mentioned Alan Gordon in the past, but he's kind of like this MLS folk hero. I just love that he's on this star-studded, wealthy team that has all these championships, and he's like kind of time and again proved to play like a really important role in this team, and I just kind of love it. Any comments on RSL before we move on to the next Galaxy game?
No, I'm going to save it for our year in review of RSL, because I think this game was a bit typical of the struggles they've had at the end of the season. I feel the same about RSL that I think Philly fans feel about their team, which is that the disappointing end to the season. If momentum is everything that you need carrying yourself into it, RSL just hasn't shown it in the past few months. It just seems like they never quite got out of that rut.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, but I think that RSL deserves a deep dive analysis. I think that after the playoffs, we'll probably go through each team and sort of do a year in review for the off season, something to look forward to, listeners. we will still be around in the off season after
deep analysis.
Yeah, deep analysis. A good 20 minutes. But moving on, Galaxy then defeated Colorado 1-0 at StubHub. Bruce Arena once again starting this game with what worked against RSL, with Boateng and Alan Gordon getting the starting nod, while Pablo Mastroianni starting a lineup that felt, as I mentioned, sort of defensive to me, choosing to keep Marlon Harrison on the bench, also keeping Jermaine Jones on the bench. Then he also put Kevin Doyle alone up front as a lone striker, which we've actually seen recently him not do, and it working out really well. So that was a bit of a head scratcher. And then he was putting Dominic Baggi wide left, who, as we've also seen in the second half of the season, a lot more Baggi sort of in this forward attacking role. It just all felt really defensively minded to me.
Yeah, I mean, I think he was hoping that Baggi could get in behind on the left, you know, and cause some damage, and that you have, you know, Powers and Doyle and Gashi making runs into the box, and that would be how you would break LA down. I still just don't know why they didn't stick with this plan of having Doyle as sort of the false nine floating behind either Calvert or especially Dominic Baggi.
Yeah.
Just because it's been successful.
Yeah.
You know, do what has been successful in the past. Because again, in the playoffs, and this is gonna be Colorado's problem, is that if you can't sneak a goal, you know, you're in a team that can't score a lot of goals, you're in deep trouble. Because now they have to go back to Colorado and they have to score and hope that LA doesn't get an away goal.
Yeah, only San Jose this season scoring less goals than Colorado Rapids. Yeah, it's a bit of weird playoffs. It's like suddenly all these like last minute tweaks. I'm a bit perplexed by it.
Also for LA, I think obviously this lineup is going to be the big story for them. The lineup changes. Why is Keane not starting? Why is Gerrard not starting? Is this, you know, the sign of the team that Bruce Arena thinks is his best team? I mean, if there's any coach in MLS that can sideline a DP player of Marseille, it's Bruce Arena, and can say, this is my best team. I like the way that Donovan, Boateng, Dos Santos all link up to a target striker. I like that. So far, it's working.
Yeah, I think I wouldn't be surprised if we see Keane start. Maybe not the next game, but if they do move on to the playoffs, maybe some of the later rounds, I think probably not starting him, wanting him sort of to slowly come back after an injury-riddled season. But I think you do make some good points.
You can't play him with Dos Santos.
That is true. Yeah, you have mentioned that in the past.
They can't perform with each other. Dos Santos is at his best when Keane isn't playing because they occupy similar spaces, and they don't connect. And if you're going to have Donovan and Dos Santos, you definitely can't have Keane. So the thing is, in what system does Keane work best, and is Keane better than Dos Santos in these situations? I mean, these are really serious questions for Bruce Arena to answer. I wouldn't be surprised, I'm going to differ from you a little bit,
okay,
is if he starts the same lineup again.
Yeah, I can see that. I mean, we should mention, you know, Colorado undefeated at home this season. But it does kind of, as you mentioned, put them in a situation we've never really seen them in before, where they'll be kind of forced to score goals at home. But then also, they have to find a way to prevent LA from scoring, and LA, of course, has scored the most goals this season of any other MLS team. Yeah, so it's interesting because you have two teams. You have a team that scores a lot of goals going against a team that is more defensive minded and doesn't score a lot of goals. And I think that advantage goes to Galaxy here.
Yeah, I probably agree. By the way, how about that assist from Yella Van Damme?
Oh my gosh. Just such a strange but awesome. Like, first of all, when I saw him all the way up there, I'm like, what is he doing? And then he totally he faked out the defender and nice little like pass into the box. Yeah, I mean,
MLS Defender of the Year, you think?
Oh yeah, definitely. I think so. And I just love how also Galaxy fans have really taken to him. The mm-hmm. announcers for this game were mentioning about how Los Angeles, he's kind of like become like a fan favorite, and deservedly so. Moving on from the LA Colorado game, we should talk about Seattle defeating Sporting Kansas City in the knockout round, 1-0. A really strange, wild game, very open. It was almost like there was no midfield in this game. Nelson Valdez eventually getting the go-ahead goal. First goal for Seattle since last year's playoffs for Nelson Valdez. And I feel like this game was sort of also a story of the goalkeepers. As we mentioned, Stefan Fry has really been in great form. I believe he had 7 saves in this game.
Yep.
It also possibly marked, on the other side of the field, the last game for Benny Feilhaber, who actually had a really great game, But probably the thing that everybody will remember from this game is the foul he against him by Ozzie Alonso. Ozzie Alonso kind of like came flying out of nowhere to take out Benny Feilhaber, who was like driving down the field.
Yeah, high speed collision.
Yeah, right? High speed. Yeah, Ozzie actually making a great tackle in the replay, getting all ball, and Feilhaber kind of really kind of dragging his leg and kind of tumbled. I can see, though, Feilhaber wanted a yellow, we should mention.
And it would have been a second
yellow. It would have been Alonso's second yellow. Definitely a big controversial moment in this game. Alonso was called for the foul, but was not shown a yellow. Feilhaber went absolutely nuts on the field. I can see why he would want a yellow. It was a clean tackle. However, it did really... It was a tackle of inches, like a few inches a difference, and it could have been like a massive injury. And refs can call that if they think that it could endanger or it is reckless. And I think it was a little bit of a reckless tackle, even if it was clean.
Well, I mean, in a game with no midfield where you have players at full sprint going box to box, and you're the ref, you have to make that call. Is it about player safety? So I'm going to start calling yellows so that, you know, what is normally a tactical foul doesn't turn into someone's broken leg.
Right.
Or are you going to let them play? You know, for the sake of excitement, I do like when they let them play, but there is a safety issue. I mean, like you said, if Alonso had been half a second later on that tackle, he would have taken Feilhaber out.
And so like, kind of this big controversial moment in the game, and Peter Vermees later saying that Pro and the refs owe Sporting Kansas City an apology, but I don't really have time for that.
Beisler's goal was called offside.
Yeah, and it can be argued that Valdez was like half a shoulder offside, kind of tough. But I don't know. The point still being, like, you got shut out. You need to score goals.
Yep.
You know, and I understand. Even if he does have a point that the refs made some mistakes in this game, that happens. That's part of soccer.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you like come out and say, oh, I'm apology. Like, it wasn't. You know, it wasn't like a handball goal, like, you know, or something like that. You know, I mean, these are mistakes that refs make, and I think that you still need to look at your team and be like, you know, well, we didn't score.
Yeah,
you know,
and as far as MLS playoff controversial officiating decisions go, these are pretty light compared to what we've seen in the past.
I would think so.
And yeah, I agree. I mean, it's one thing to complain. I'm all for managers being able to say when they feel like a call wasn't made properly and
sure,
how it affected the game. But I mean, for Peter Vermees to demand an apology, I mean, that's like, you know, that's a little. I don't like that kind of stuff.
Yeah, definitely. And do you think that Benny Feilhaber will be back in Kansas City? Obviously, we've mentioned rumors of him going to Israel. I think it'd be kind of crazy if they don't try to re-sign him.
Oh, they should try to re-sign him for sure. But I mean, it's all up to him. I mean, what he wants to do. But also, does this team, you know, need a reboot? I think that's a serious question as well. I mean, who is going to take his place if he leaves SKC? Does that mean that they want to keep Feilhaber, who didn't really perform at the MVP candidate levels that he did for 2015?
Yeah, had a good game here, season. But definitely not a full season of impressive stuff.
I mean. Right, and do you want to start looking forward to the future now? I mean, MLS, you know, clubs have made good strides in the past few years by thinking in exactly that way, thinking 2 years down the line, 4 years down the line, as opposed to how do I keep the stars either I have? I mean, sometimes that can actually work to your detriment because someone is such a face of a franchise like Benny Feilhaber is for SKC.
Yeah, interesting point. It will be curious to see what Sporting Kansas City does this offseason and whether or not Benny Feilhaber will stay in the United States or maybe go overseas as is rumored. The final game we will cover is probably the biggest surprise of this playoff so far, arguably, with Seattle handedly defeating FC Dallas 3-0 in Seattle. An unexpected defeat of the Treble Chasers at the hands of the Schmetzer Sounders.
Schmetzer Sounders.
Curious decision here, I think, by Oscar Pereira. I think the going with a back five. FC Dallas has not played with back five all season. It kind of put Atiba Harris and Ryan Hollingshead as wingbacks rather than fullbacks, and they looked really lost on like when to track back and like when to go forward. And no surprise, this game was lost on the wings. In Seattle's second goal, it was really both Atiba Harris and then actually Walker Zimmer miscommunicating and being caught out of position in the midfield, allowing Morris to use his speed, make that run down the left, catching Dallas on the counter. Guess what? The exact same thing happened in the second goal. Nicolas Lodero running down that side. I just, yeah, I don't, and, you know, it also actually put a lot of pressure on Maynor Figueroa in the middle, who had an absolutely terrible game.
Yep.
I think Oscar Pereira has pushed a lot of the right buttons this season. I mean, it says in them winning the Supporters Shield, you know, winning the U.S. Open Cup. But, curious decisions in this game. Kind of overcompensating for the Morris-Ladero duo.
Yeah, I think overcompensating for Morris and Ladero, but also overcompensating for not having Mauro Diaz, you know, and trying to figure out how FC Dallas is going to respond to that. Having Ulloa in the midfield and having a back five is obviously you're setting up defensively.
Right.
Having Arruti up top by himself with Acosta kind of just behind him is putting Acosta in a position that he's not necessarily used to. I love Kellen Acosta, and I think he can play there.
Right.
I think he can do well. We've seen Tony Chani in a similar position where he's been moved further up for Columbus Crew and has performed very well. But I don't think this is necessarily the game when you do that away in Seattle, which is a team that's cruising in the playoffs. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, and once again, another like a game decided by a strange tactical decision by a manager in this playoff game. You know, and actually FC Dallas having the advantage here, like going in away, but well rested, while Seattle like had a midweek game.
All you need to do is score an away goal, and you come away with something.
Right. Yeah. I'm very, very hesitant to criticize Oscar Pereira. I think he is a contender for manager of the year. I like him. I love what he's done in FC Dallas. I think, though, it has to be asked, if your entire team relies on a single player and that player goes injured and your entire team kind of falls apart, like that's sort of problematic. Like you need to adjust. That happens. Injuries happen. Now, mind you, Mauro Diaz, as we've waxed poetics about all season, is an integral part of that team, and we obviously said it's gonna be really hard for them to make a playoff run without him. That being said, it happens. Injuries happen, and you got to adjust. And it's just this team is proving, FC Dallas, the squad, and Oscar Pereira have just not been able to figure out a way to have this team perform anywhere near the level that they perform when Mauro Diaz is in that lineup.
Yeah, and I think also it might be something to say towards what we were saying, the inverse of what we were saying about Montreal Impact, with veteran and age status really helping you in the playoffs, whereas FC Dallas, and it's been said a lot, is a very young team. And even some of the older, more veteran players that you have, like Mauro Rosales, didn't start. You only had Maxi Arruti kind of an older sort of veteran leader on the field. And I think that could affect you as well, because you can get shaken. I mean, all these goals happen in about an 8-minute spread.
Yeah.
That's a team that's gotten shaken by the first goal. When you have a back five, that should not happen because you're set up to bunker and receive these sort of things. That said, Brian Schmetzer, I'm gonna change over here.
Yeah, by all means, let's
kudos to him
for real
for having faith in Nelson Valdez after scoring his first goal of the year in the last game by giving him the start up front and moving Morris out to the wing. I saw that and thought to myself, why would you do that? Because you're just setting yourself up for having to make a positional change if Valdez doesn't score. But having Morris out on that wing meant that every time that he used his pace to beat Harris, get in behind, he was one-on-one with Walker Zimmerman. And that just caused all sorts of chaos.
Yeah, all sorts of chaos. Yeah, Schmetzer really pushing the right buttons. If we want to talk about managers here, every player on this team seems to be performing at their highest level. Yeah, very impressive with what he's done. And yeah, putting faith in Nelson Valdez, who has really been kind of like the lost man, especially under Siggy Schmidt, performing and like turning up big in the playoffs. Really, really hard to see how FC Dallas comes back from this.
It's going to be tough, but they're going to have to play their most offensive lineup, and they're going to have to get the best out of players that can perform offensively beyond just Arruti, Akindele. They're going to need Ruiz. They're going to need Hollingshead. They're going to need Acosta. They're going to need everyone going forward because they've just got to score so many goals. They can do it, but without Mauro Diaz, it's going to be tough.
Yeah, and I also just think that the way that Seattle's defense has been performing, particularly the quality of Stephen Fry recently, it's going to be really, really tough. I mean, I definitely feel like the Sounders are probably going to be moving on, but we'll have to wait and see for this weekend. And that wraps up this episode of the MLS Podcast. You can rate and review us on iTunes. You can also follow us on Twitter at the MLS Podcast. We are also on Facebook, if that is your preferred choice of social media. Very, very exciting number of games coming up in the second leg. We'll be watching them. We hope you will be too, and we'll be back next week. Bye.
Bye-bye.